start the show.
Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. We're still here. We're still doing it. And we are sliding on into traffic. Starring everybody. This movie has
Movie, like I said in the text thread, whoever has the next pick.
Which is me.
I already forgot. You have a cavalcade of actors to pick from. This movie has like a huge cast.
Henry Cavalcade. It is a big old cast. Who picked, what was the connection to get us here? Because I missed last week.
What's his name? The guy that plays like the department head or whatever. Albert Finney, I think is his name.
Oh my God. Finney, wow. What a wild connection.
Yeah.
Is that his name? Albert
Finney? Yeah, Albert That's Finney. Not Brian Cox. Because when I first saw him, I was like, ooh, Brian Cox.
But no, Albert Finney played Kilmore Trout in Breakfast of Champions.
Kilmore Powerhead?
No. Kilmore, okay. I don't understand that.
That's an offspring joke for like two people.
Oh God. Offspring
joke. Oof. Yeah.
You've read some Vonnegut. You know who Kilgore Trout is.
Yes, a little bit. I want to kill more trout.
Do you? Why?
Because they're delicious. All right.
So. I mean, there's a billion places you can just get them in Baltimore without having to kill them.
Yeah,
that's true. Lake Trout?
Lake Trout. Oh, anywho.
Big fan.
Yeah, so here we are.
Yeah, we watched Traffic, Steven Soderbergh's Traffic, a movie that I vowed not to watch as a joke. I don't even know, just me being an asshole. When did this come out? 99, 2000?
2006, I think.
Oh, wow, that late?
I think so.
I thought it was way earlier than that.
Post 9/11.
Is it?
Yeah.
2000.
Pre
9/11.
It's pre 9/11. They don't know what a 9/11 would have done to the plot of this movie.
But anyway, I literally just out of a joke said I'd never watch this movie. And then every time I was asked, like, yeah, I'm not going to watch it. I don't know. It was just a stupid joke. And I just
When was 9/11?
2001. Okay. I almost said it was on 9/11.
So on IMDb at the top it said 2000, but his wide release must have been January 5th, 2001. So still pre 9/11.
Still pre 9/11.
By about 9 months.
So six days. 30 years later, I watched this movie and I liked it.
Yeah. It's a good movie. It won like 4 Oscars.
I can see why. It's very, very well made. It's well acted. We'll get into it. You all watch? Oh, no Sean this week.
No Sean Marino.
No Sean Marino.
There, I knew Sean Marino, and you are no Sean.
Sean is, I don't know, getting indicted or something like that.
Or indicting his dad's dick.
Jesus. Nice. Got him, man. What did y'all watch this week? Alec.
I watched two things, I think.
Two things?
Yeah, I've been doing a good job keeping up on my list, so I forget everything. Everything.
Mm.
Ooh, I did got to update the episode numbers, too. Jesus Christ, I'm way behind. What's today?
Today is 6/10/2025.
463 episodes.
Good night. Great day in the morning.
463.
Yeah, we're probably going to hit 500 next winter, I think.
Wow.
Somewhere in there. But I watched two things. One, I'll table because I watched it with my two bros who are also on the show. Bros.
That's us, bros.
The other thing I watched was Sinners.
Oh, yeah. We talked a little bit about that. Analog. Yeah.
I thought Sinners was pretty good. It's not, like, outstanding. It's not great. Yeah. Ryan Coogler said it was, like, he felt the most important movie he's made.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm not him, so I don't know what his reasons were for thinking it was important. It's definitely not his best. In fact, I would say it's probably his worst. But that's still high praise. Like, this man makes nothing but grand slams. Like, Fruitvale Station is a movie I never want to watch again, but it's fucking incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Creed. Did he do Creed 2? No, or just one?
He just did one.
I feel like we one, had this
but
guy.
He did both Black Panthers. He did Black Panthers. No, Michael B. Jordan did three.
Which was
he
great.
He did both Black Panthers, though, and those are both excellent. Like, yeah. The man makes nothing but bangers. And, like, this isn't quite a banger. It's not bad. I still liked it and enjoyed it, but it just, there was something about it just didn't quite grab me.
It takes too long.
Just like tonight's movie. But premise is like awesome. There's just, I don't know, there's something that's just missing about it for me. Like vampires attacking a 40s. Gin joint, like, sounds fucking cool as shit. Like, it sounds like a fucking slam dunk, especially from like Ryan Coogler. But it's like a slam dunk, but like, I don't know, Steph Curry slamming at home. It's not like a five slam pajama. And I don't want people to think I think it's bad. I think it's good. I enjoy it.
It's funny. You sound just
not,
like me.
It's not as good as all of his other work.
It sounds like you're grappling with the fact that you didn't love it. That's the same problem I had, because I really wanted to love it, but then I was kind of left kind of wanting. Like, I want, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I really wanted to love it, and it's just not there. I don't know. And then when everyone else loved it and says it's like the greatest movie ever made, I'm like, I don't know.
You sure about that?
It's not bad. It is not bad. Let it be known. And I said this. I said the same thing when I watched it a while back. It's not a bad movie. It's just, I don't know, man. It just, for me personally, it's the first like half of that movie just takes so long to get going. And then when you finally get to the vampires, it's like an hour and 15 minutes into the movie, and you're like, all right, finally. And then the vampire stuff is, I don't know, it's fine, but it's nothing you haven't seen before in 50 other movies, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to liken this, and I was trying to think, I had like a vision in my head of what I was trying to come up with, and I finally just did. This, I feel like this, like I felt about Argyle for Matthew Vaughn. Like Matthew Vaughn's first 6 movies are all 100% bangers. I never saw The King's Man. But I know you guys did not care for the third one. Yeah,
that's the Ray Fiennes one, right?
No, I never saw that.
That was not one. Gogs didn't like it.
Not good.
And me and Gogs,
I like the second Kingsman movie. I like the
second one was a ton of fun. The Pedro Pascal one.
Yeah, I never saw the third one.
I liked Argyle a lot, but like when you compare it to Lair Cake, Stardust, Kick-Ass, First Class. Both the first two Kingsman movies, like, it's just not fair. Yeah, and it's probably not fair. It's not fair to hold him to the standard of some of those movies. Just like with Ryan Coogler, like, it's not fair to hold every movie he makes up to like Fruitvale Station, like, sure, which is a fucking absolute masterpiece. But that's what I'm doing, unfortunately. So
yeah,
it's
you kind of have to, though. I mean, it's his own body of work.
Nobody's going to make... Not everything... Nobody's ever going to have bangers. Like, everything's a banger.
I mean, him being a victim of his own success is not that terrible a complaint, well, and
also
right?
This, like, but he's also, like, not a victim, because this movie is, like, wildly popular. Yeah, so,
like,
you know,
people absolutely love it.
It's also, I think, I don't follow this stuff, because I don't really care about box office. But apparently it's one of the most successful, like, R-rated movies ever made for, like, a new IP. Like, I think some of the sequel horror movies have made more money, but as far as, like a standalone IP, I think it's one of the, like, highest grossing R-rated movies, which is good. I mean, you know, if nothing else, I'm glad, like, a movie like this comes out and is super successful. That's, like, an original movie. It's not a sequel. It's not a remake. Like, that's a good thing. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
no. Yeah, original movies are few and far between.
Yes.
Despite that, I still think it's just kind of mediocre, but I mean, whatever. But I hate everything. So what do you want?
He really does, folks.
I know. You know, it's funny because I listen back to the shows and like I tend to like most. I like a lot of things. I don't know. It's just the stuff I hate. I really hate. I guess that's what it is. I just passionately hate things.
But yeah, the other thing I watched is Tabled until
Tabled until some point.
Okay. TJ.
I watched one thing other than the Tabled thing, and I'll make it brief because neither one of you probably give a shit about it. I watched a movie from the 70s called The Vanishing. It's Stanley Kubrick's favorite movie. That's not the car chase movie.
I'm thinking of Vanishing
Point. No, you're thinking of Vanishing Point, which is also excellent, by the way. No, The Vanishing is this, I believe it's Dutch. I don't know. I don't know what language they're speaking the whole movie. But it's a story about this married couple that goes on a holiday, right? And basically, they stop at this gas station, and the wife disappears. Like, she's gone.
Okay.
And then 3 years later, the kidnapper keeps sending the husband, like, these postcards, and it's fucking creepy. I don't want to give everything away, because the movie's got a lot of twists and turns. But it's a very slow burn movie. And also, like, you get the perspective of the kidnapper, which is pretty wild. But the movie is, like, acted really well. It's super tense. I really thought it was fucking brilliant. I can't say enough good things about it. I can understand why Kubrick liked it so much. It reminds me a lot of his movies, actually. But it is just dripping with, like, atmosphere. And it's one of those movies. Like, I'm going to kind of relate it to something that's a lot more, like, bombastic and grandiose, but, like, a movie like Long Legs, where the whole movie, something feels wrong the whole movie, and it has this kind of, like, lingering tension just under the surface. That's what this movie is. Not as in-your-face, obviously, as Long Legs is, but it's very, very good. The Vanishing, I highly recommend it. And the other thing I watched is Tabled, so I'll turn it over to Gog, so I guess you could probably go into the Tabled thing now if you want.
Yeah, it's sort of the only thing I managed to watch was we did it. The Accountant 2, Still Accounting, and we watched it together.
More like The Accountant. Ew. No, I didn't think that. I just
thought, I digress.
The porn version of The Accountant. Ew. Gross.
Yeah.
The accountant's goo.
Anywho,
yeah,
we watched The Accountant too. We had a succulent Indian meal, and then we watched.
Yeah, that was really good. Go to the Mint Room in Ellicott City. Delicious. Yeah,
go check it out.
Service not the greatest, but
service a little confusing.
Delicious food though. I will say whatever that shrimp was in that curry sauce was fantastic.
Oh, I didn't even try the shrimp. I should have.
It was very good. The tiki marsala was very good. It was masala. I always put an R in that one. There's no R in
that. It's marsala wine, you know what I'm saying?
It was fantastic.
So anywho, we watched we got together, we got to watch Accountant 2. And let me tell you,
I will say though, sidebar real quick. It was nice to watch a movie with you guys again. I missed it. We haven't watched a movie together in so long. And Gog's Basement reminded me of the old days.
And it was a good ass movie. Like, it was a lot of fun.
Was it a good ass movie?
I liked it. The tone is insane. The tone is. I mean, I think it's like if Rain Man and Traffic honestly had a baby. Like,
here's the thing for me personally, I didn't hate it. I didn't like it as much as the first one, because for me, like, I know it's been like 10 years since the first one came out, but the tone is totally different. It's like a totally different movie, and I felt like the characters felt very different. And the funny thing is that what I enjoyed in the movie, kind of in spite of itself, like, I liked the silly parts. It was when it turned into like a serious movie. I was like, I'm not really into this anymore. Like, I kind of just want them. Like, I kind of wish this was just another movie, not The Accountant. I just want John Bernthal and Ben Affleck because they have really good chemistry together.
They do.
Like, I just want them riffing off each other and like, I want like the fucking like, I don't know, like the early 2000s comedy with those two, like the Wedding Crashers with John Bernthal and Ben Affleck. Because in the, we all said it. There's a part in this movie where like in the middle of this like movie about like sex trafficking and like all kinds of like crazy shit. They like stop to have a hoedown at a country bar. And then, I mean, that sequence is really fun and great. And it's, I really enjoyed it. But like, then they're like, oh yeah, the movie's happening. Like, it's very odd. And I mean, to the movie's credit, the action sequences are very well done. Again, Bernthal, I mean, I'll watch Bernthal read a phone book. And Affleck's really grown on me over the years. Like, it's a perfectly cromulent film. I just feel like it didn't feel congruent with the first movie at all.
No, the tone, when we put it on, it said an action comedy. And I'm like, huh. Because I didn't remember the first one being an action comedy. And it is just, Bernthal's great in it. Affleck's a lot of fun. I feel like he's really leaning into the autism this time around. Like he's, I don't remember him being like that sort of particular in the, maybe I'm wrong, but
yeah, I think you're wrong.
Was he like that?
Yeah. He had a lot of issues in the first one.
Yeah. Well, I have to rewatch the first one. Cause I agree with Gogs a little bit. Like, I mean, he was autistic, but like, I don't know, he seemed extra autistic.
He's like bonus autistic.
But like, I got to rewatch the first. I actually planned to rewatch the first one this week. I meant to.
That first one is a banger.
I remember loving it. And I also remember that was one of our famous lost episodes because for almost a year, I think we didn't have that. We recorded it. We couldn't find it. And then I found it backed up. Reaper does like backup files and I found it. So,
well, it was a
special podcast in our hearts.
Like, I thought the action sequences were great. I thought it was well directed. Like you said, Affleck and Bernthal have great chemistry. The plot was wild between Affleck trying to find love, Affleck using his Xavier School for gifted autistic kids, center base, his brother just going up to fuck shit up, and then just dismantling a human trafficking ring. And
but then you also have like the subplot where the wife, like she basically gets like almost killed. Then she gets a fucking like plastic surgery, but then like comes out of a coma to become an assassin somehow.
Yeah. Like she got blunt force trauma into being
that taskmaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what they call it acquired savant syndrome? Was
this kind of shit?
Yeah,
they actually do call it that in the movie, which is ridiculous. This kind of shit I find more acceptable in like very like crappy low budget 80s movies where like shit like this happens and they're just like, eh. It happens in a higher budget movie like this, and I'm like, you could have, I don't know. It's a little much. But again, I didn't hate my time with the film. I feel like it's not as good as the first one, you know?
Mm. I'm having trouble remembering the first one, but I do remember the tone being significantly different.
They're eating ice cream on the Orioles broadcast, and now I really want ice cream. Sorry, that's just a sidebar. I got to go back to that Brewster's. Oh, my God. Maybe I'll go there after the show.
Well, hit me up. It's a mere stone's throw away.
It's so good. Everybody go to that. Go to the Mint Room and then go to Brewster's. They're right across the street from each other.
And then come on by and say hi to Gogs.
we kind of doxed you just now, so good job. I'll have to bleep all that out.
Well, you can, whatever. If they come to my house, come heavy. That's all I'm saying.
If Nate shows up at your house.
He slept here. He knows exactly where I live.
If Matt McCormick shows up at your house.
He's also Oh, I'd be so
if one of the four people that listen to us, Nate, Brent, Matt, Anthony.
Yeah, if any of them show up at my house, I will be ecstatic. I love all of those people.
Gunnar Henderson with the RBI, 1-1, bottom of the third. All right, sorry.
Roll videotape. But yeah, that's all I watched.
All right, cool. Well, let's get into Steven Soderbergh's Traffic. I was kind of shocked I've never seen this movie because I've heard about this movie for years. I actually really like Steven Soderbergh a lot, but he's like prolific as far as being a director goes. Like he's directed a shit ton of movies. And yeah, I'm surprised I never watched it. What just happened?
I don't know, man. Did the remix?
My screen just got weird. Anyway. But you guys, you had seen this before?
I had. I'd seen this a long time ago.
Alec, had you ever seen this before?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know why you said it like that.
No, I'd seen this. I think
it's like this isn't like age d'or. I mean, it's a pretty popular movie. I don't know. I didn't think that was a
popular movie.
This was absolutely popular. This movie won like 7 Oscars. This movie was huge.
Popular back then.
Well, yeah, but did you not watch movies in 2000? I mean,
not movies like this.
Fair enough. All right, Jesus.
I'm digging through that guilt box that my parents dropped at my house.
Do you have a DVD of?
I might have it on VHS.
No shit.
I might like. It was like it's from 2000, right? So I had not invested into a DVD player quite yet. So there is a chance.
Now, don't you all miss those days? Remember just buying 3 movies for $15 at Blockbuster?
Oh, God. Them's were the days.
You kids today don't understand the joys of buying cheap DVDs.
I thought I had it. I guess I don't. I got a copy of Shaft, though. Oh, wait, there's another box. Anyway.
I remember liking that movie. The remake, the Samuel L. Jackson remake.
This is the original.
Oh, that's a banger, too, obviously.
Banger. Anyway. Oh, it also.
Anyway. Oh, hell yeah. Dolomite.
Rudy Ray Moore's Dolomite. Anyway. Sick. So, Traffic. Steven Soderbergh's Traffic. Here's what's funny. I know exactly what happens in this movie. I forget how it opens. I think it opens in Mexico. I'm not even going to do that.
Still in the league?
Oh, I'm just going to do it my way. Like Frank Sinatra.
Like Frank Sinatra.
So.
Yeah, I think you're right. It opens with Benicio del Toro.
It does. Oh, yeah. It's him. Him and his boy are hunting down sky drugs.
Manolo.
In the Riviera or whatever.
Also, Benicio del Toro. I don't know, like I saw that Che Guevara movie and he speaks entirely.
He was doing something.
But I like him. Him in Spanish is really cool. I don't know. I love Benicio del Toro. He's like one of my favorite actors. He's just so fucking cool. And like he's extra cool when he's speaking Spanish. I don't know why. He just there's
one scene that he is, to use a term I think the kids are using, he's aura farming. When they are like, he's talking to those tourists downtown who's got like their truck stolen.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Call this guy, and then he'll tell you where the car is. And then it's like, oh, we're gonna get a bribe. He's like, see, yes. And we're just like, he's so fucking cool. Anyway, I'm gonna not do this movie chronologically in the classic sense. I'm just gonna this movie, and it's after our text message. Text message conversations about the movie. I thought about it like, I think it was Anthony's complaint. It was someone's complaint about Strange Darling. That if you were to see Strange Darling in order,
Anthony's complaint, yes,
it would have been boring. Yes. And I like Traffic. I'm going to stay that right now. But if you were to watch, there's 3 plot lines and they're basically, I tried to see if there was a deeper meaning to this. There is not.
Almost 3.5.
Yeah,
I feel like Michael Douglas's arc is slightly different than his crackhead daughter arc. Like that's almost 2 divergent storylines. They do come together.
Yeah. Well,
I was reading in the blah blah blah, like behind the scenes shit. Mm-hmm. And he filmed them all with different filters.
Oh, you're right.
To clearly show the different stories.
Yeah, yeah, I was trying to see if there was something that was like more to that, like the filters were. Specifically to help you keep track of this is storyline A, this is storyline B, this is storyline C. There's no like deeper meaning to it. At least
I actually liked. I like that. I thought it was visually interesting. Well, it also kind of ruined movies for the next 40 years till now.
Oh, because people bit
every
on
time
that
you go to
bad.
Fucking like South America or Mexico, yellow filter every goddamn time. Yeah. So like, thank you, Steven Soderbergh, for that. But
thank you, Steven
it
Soderbergh.
Works in this movie. I mean,
but anyway, I'm gonna do the Mexico storyline first. Mexico storyline is Benicio del Toro and his partner, who I recognized, but I did not bother to look up. They bust some drug dealers flying cocaine into, I believe they are in Tijuana.
Tijuana
and Juarez are the two major locations in Mexico in the movie. And then they do a big old drug bust, and they're happy about it. And then all of a sudden the federales show up, and they're like, all right, we're taking over from here. Holler at me sometime. And then there's this guy, General Salazar, and he's like, dude, I'm trying to knock out the Obregon brothers. I want to crush the cartels. Like, you know, the other dude, the Scorpion, is dead. We're going to get rid of this guy. We're going to clean up Mexico. You know, it's all good, fam. And he's like, all right, cool. I'll fuck with you. And then like, they go on a plot to go steal Clifton Collins from a gay bar in San Diego and then just torture the shit out of him.
Well, Clifton Collins is an assassin for that other gang.
A Sicario, I believe.
Oh, they even use the word. That's true. Yeah.
So they torture the hell out of him. They figure out who's the guys that killed the captains for the whoever's. And then they're like, all right, cool. This is fun. Then they set his ass out to free just to get murdered because he flipped on the script
somehow.
Huh?
He doesn't get murdered. He ends up like
he does.
Eventually, he gets murdered, but not like he makes it pretty far along through the movie.
Yeah, and he makes it longer than I remembered. So then he is. So then they're still doing their thing. They're hanging out with Selma Hayek's hot ass. And then they find out that the Scorpion is alive. And oh yeah, General Salazar is maybe a scumbag, and he is working to. He's working with the, let's just say the Tijuana cartel to take out the, whatever the other city, Juarez cartel. Or he's with Juarez to take out Tijuana. Either way, Salazar's a bad guy. Fucking Benicio del Toro is like, his partner is like getting a taste of the life. And his partner's like, oh, I think I'm going to turn over to the feds. And then he gets intercepted by the general's dudes. General's dudes make him dig a hole and get blasted in the head. That scene is cold as shit. And then Benicio del Toro's like, they're like, all right, you're cool. But he's not cool because he meets with some federal agents in a pool, which I think is, I love that set of scenes.
Yeah, that scene was
like,
great. Yeah.
He gets in their car and he's like, we're going somewhere. He's like, no, here's safe. Here's safe. He's like, okay, well, where do you want to meet? And the next scene is just them floating
in a pool in the public
where nothing can happen. No one's wearing a wire. Like, it's completely, like, he's got complete control of the situation. He's like, listen, man, I'm taking a risk here. You know what I want? I don't want money. I want a park. I want a baseball field. I want places where kids can grow up and be kids.
He wants lights for the baseball field so they can play at night, so they can be safe, which I really liked. To jump to the end, I really like the end shot of this movie where the baseball field has lights and they're playing. It literally ends on like a 3-minute shot of them playing baseball. Like, it stays with it for a while. It's like,
yeah, it's nice.
I thought that was a very cool ending.
The Mexican cartel. So he turns to the feds. The feds bust Salazar. They break him down. There's a scene where he's in the same torture room they had Clifton Collins in, and then I guess someone gives him a hot dose of heroin or some such. Then his ass is dead, and then Benicio del Toro's doing a news report and bragging about what have you, and then he gets a baseball field out of the deal. That is plot line one. Now that's all interwoven with whatever. Plot line two. Michael Douglas is a judge from Ohio, and he has been appointed by the president, of with whom he is college buddies with or some such to become the new drug czar. And he's taken over from Thanos' dad. And he's going to be in charge of making sure that Mexico stays Mexican and stays out of here because that's his whole bit. So he goes and visits wherever, and he's doing his thing. He's being all political. Meanwhile, his daughter, who is not from Save the Last Dance.
Isn't that her? No. It's Swim Fan.
Right? Yeah, Erica Christensen. She's from Erica Swim Christensen. Fan.
Yeah. Is she the is swim she Dumb and Dumber's
Shout out to sister? Swim Fan.
That's Christian someone else. Never mind.
That's Erica remember. Christian Olsen, I think.
Erica Christian Olsen. Thank you.
No.
Not the guy that made the musicals. No, that's Hans.
That's Christian Hans Christian Andersen. Brother of Menelaus.
Hans Christian Andersen, the guy who got thrown off the Nakatomi Plaza.
That's Hans Gruber.
Oh. So
isn't that the guy that's the MacGyver parody?
That's Mugruber.
Mugruber.
isn't that a private school in Baltimore or PG County? No, that's Magruder.
Oh, shit.
Too far.
All right. Anyway.
Too far.
I like it, though.
Too far. So now, he's doing all this. And then Topher Grace, who apparently in real life is a decent human being because of all the members of the cast of That 70s Show, he's the only one that didn't party with Diddy and didn't get, strung out. Like Wilbur Valorana, Danny Mathis, everybody else had problems.
Not only that, but he's also one of, what's his name? Mila Kunis and Austin Kutcher when Danny Masterson was... What'd I say?
Mila Kunis and Austin Kutcher.
Aston Kutcher? What'd I say? I don't know what his fucking name.
Not anyway, Aston.
They're assholes, and they wrote a letter to the judge while he was on trial for fucking rape about how he's a decent person and all this shit. And yeah, Topher Grace is like, yeah, fuck you. I'm not doing that.
Shout out to Topher Grace. Anyway, he seems to consistently in movies play an absolute creep. I can't think of one time where I've seen Topher Grace in a film and I've been like, oh, that's a good person.
Ocean's 11.
He was in Ocean's 11.
He's in the scene at the beginning where Brad Pitt's teaching the celebrities how to play cards.
All reds.
It's like, oh, guy, I got you beat. All reds.
Reds.
And the other Josh Jackson's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Josh Jackson thought really something was happening there. But like in Predators, scumbag, right? In Klansman, scumbag.
Oh, yeah.
In this movie, scumbag.
Spider-Man 3. Misunderstood scumbag. Alien host.
So anyway, but he's there and he's sitting there, he's finger blasting Michael Douglas's daughter, and who is not of age, which makes it even more concerning.
Aren't they the same age?
I don't know. They explicitly name check that she's 16 in the movie, and it's like,
I think. Well, he's in high school too, so
their parents knew him and were fine with it. It's not like,
yeah,
it was a consensual blast, is what you're saying.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
it's not like kids. He was in his 20s, and they're like, who is this guy she's dating?
Fair enough. So anywho, he's
go ahead. You do have a good point, though. Every blast should be consensual.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Any blast. So, I'm an ally. So,
these and LGBTQIA is God.
Yeah, that's what the G is for. Happy Pride. The boys were not backing out. The kids are just doing this pseudo intellectual stuff the kids were doing circa 2000, where they're doing drugs in a mansion and talking about stuff how round is a cube or whatever they're saying.
Yeah, they are
obnoxious, rich kids. Yeah.
There's a part towards the end of the movie where Topher Grace is trying to talk about societal problems with Michael Douglas, and it's just like, you shut the fuck up.
He goes full woke, and it's just awful.
Yeah.
So then, his daughter goes from, I guess, smoking a little pot to cocaine to freebasing cocaine.
Bro, she does the like speed run of like, Dewey, you don't want this shit. Like, yeah, yeah. Like it's the logical next step. She goes from like fucking smoking pot to like freebasing crack in like 2 minutes. It's like
she legitimately like she does a whole Requiem for a Dream just for herself with 1/3 of this movie. She goes from being a straight A, whatever. Their one friend ODs. They drop in the hospital. They pick him up. The cops pick him up. She's like, "Hey, that wasn't my stuff. I don't know what's going on." To, I'm going to go to the risky part of town and try and get drugs from a dude and then do those drugs in my bathroom. And then my judge dad, who's having conflicts of interest and is trying to interface with General Salazar, who we met in the first half or first third of this film, because that's his equivalent over there in Mexico. And he's a drunk too. And his mom and his wife sounds like she liked to party back in the day.
Yeah. And he seems really like taken aback that she did some drugs in college.
Yeah. Yeah. His reaction to that is very weird.
Yeah. But yeah. So,
and I also like, maybe I read this wrong, but I also feel like his outrage is slightly like performative. Like he feels like a certain responsibility for his, because of his role now, like title dictates character kind of situation.
Sure. Yeah.
Cause like she says stuff like, it's like, well, it almost implies like, well, he was there too, but like, it's like, well, you can't say that anymore. Cause I'm the fucking drug czar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of, he's like, well, it's my fucking job kind of vibes. But, so anyway, she dips low, they get her into rehab or they get her into like a cleanup program or whatever. He's still drug czarin. She runs the fuck away. They can't find her for I don't know how long a period of time. Let's say this whole movie. Oh, I know how they timestamp it. When you first meet Michael Douglas's character, like you're going to be the new drug czar. You're going to give your first public speech in a month. So this entire movie takes place in like a month's time. So like, I would say for like at least a week. She's somewhere else. She is.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is getting literally pounded for crack. and then like, she like whimsically
it's not funny, but it's kind of funny.
And then she like whimsically looks in his heroin bag and he's like, oh, I got you. Here's something new to try. So she is just goofy town. Meanwhile, all the other nonsense is happening. Michael Douglas eventually rounds up Topher Grace. He's like, stand and deliver. Topher Grace is like, I don't know what you're talking about. They hunt down his daughter. They finally get her from, well, they try and confront the drug dealer. Michael Douglas almost gets his head turned into a canoe. And then he gets turned away. He finds out where, through Topher Grace, where his daughter is. She is with a gentleman who, this is definitely problematic.
Oh, I mean, this is framed as problematic. It's not like the movie's like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah. And then he's like, all right, just, you know, he wants to get his daughter back. So then she gets into a cleanup, like a for real cleanup program this time. He admits his problems. Everyone kind of has a come to Jesus-y sort of like moment. And now the family is healing. And that's how that story arc ends. And oh, and he gives his speech, and he's got this big long speech to Albert Finney. He's like, oh, this is kick-ass. And he's like, all right.
It also is important that like a lot of his storyline, that's why I said like these storylines are almost like two storylines, because it's about how he is like trying to like learn how to be like a government stooge. Like it's about him like schmoozing with like senators and stuff.
Oh, and that was a wild thing. Those were a lot of Chuck Grassley's in this.
Yeah, movie. I know. Yeah,
like I think Orrin Hatch might be in this movie. Like Orrin real Hatch. Ass senators are in this movie.
But at the end of the movie, they like basically are like, "Oh yeah, that thing with your daughter. Don't worry about it." And they just like sweep it under the rug. And I think like it's another like kind of, well, this is how politics work. Like everybody's full of shit, and like everyone's. Like it's kind of, I think the message of the movie overall is that like everyone's kind of fucking corrupt and like everything. Yeah.
It was a real Billy Carter moment.
I did like in his story when he's on the plane, either to Mexico or back from Mexico, and he asks about treatment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And
everybody just looks at him like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, yeah, and the Salazar guy's like, treatment, he's like, he says something to the effect that,
no,
like,
they OD, well, that's one less.
They OD, that's one less, yeah. It's like, Jesus Christ.
He could be in the current administration.
Yeah.
So, that's that storyline. Third storyline.
Now on to the most boring storyline.
I thought that one was
the most boring.
It's either this and the other one are the tie for most interesting to me. So Don Cheadle and Luis Guzman are they're getting ready to try and finagle some drugs out of Miguel Ferreira, who
RIP, that guy rocked.
That guy kicks ass.
Yeah, he was great.
And so like they're setting up a sting. Ferreira's going to sell him some drugs. It goes south, right? It gets south because they are DEA. I forget. Are they they're DEA, not local cops?
They're not local. No,
they're DEA. And then
the local guys blow their
local guys fuck up their whole deal.
Blow up their operation, right? So then the local cops kind of screw everything up. There's a insane shootout, like lots of bullets. And then they track down Miguel Ferreira to a Chuck E. Cheese where he's hiding in the ball pit. They blast him in his toe. They arrest him. They get him to flip on his boss.
There's a very a funny joke in a non-funny movie where, like, they walk into this Chuck E. Cheese and they're looking for him, and this clown pops out, and he just slowly backs up and shuts the door.
For half a second, I was like, is Miguel Ferreira in full clown makeup?
That would have been even funnier.
So anyway, they go to Chuck E. So Miguel Ferreira has been arrested. They get him to flip on his boss. His boss is Manny from Scarface, who is married to Catherine Zeta-Jones, who dip dives through lasers. She has no idea what's going on. And then she, speaking of speed running things, she cartel speed runs her thing. So she is dealing with Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid's kind of being a creep about it. He's not the Manolo's lawyer was Boone from Animal House. But Dennis Quaid was like his business buddy or some such.
Oh, I thought he was a lawyer too. I thought he was a different kind of, or no, was he an accountant? Because he had access to their funds somehow.
It might have been that he was an accountant. Shout out to the accountant. So that's all happening. Dennis Quaid's trying to get his Zeta on. She's not feeling it. Their kid is getting threatened by maybe other Zetas. I'm not sure. She owes them $3 million. She goes, Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid's like, I don't know what to do. And then she's like, she goes to the cops who have been watching. So like, fucking War Machine and Louis Guzman have been waiting in a bus all day, just staring at her. She brings them some lemonade. She's like, hey, someone's trying to kill my kid. If you wouldn't mind, just help a sister out. And they're like, all right, cool. She goes to see her husband in prison. He's like, there's always money in the banana stand. And she's like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Basically, yeah.
And then she looks behind this painting and finds a microfiche or microfilm. I'm not sure which one. And like maybe some account numbers. And she gets a hold of Clifton Collins, the assassin. And she's like, look, we need to take out this witness to get rid of my husband. Because apparently that's the easiest way to get rid of a case. I did not know that. But turns out.
Well, I mean, if you don't have you know, the star witness, then yeah. I mean, that was
I guess their previously recorded testimony. If you can't cross them up, you really can't admit that, right? So, like,
yeah, so,
yeah. So learning. Anywho, so she hires him. He's going to blow up dude like in Scarface. It goes south because he's finally testifying and gets out of the hotel and whatever else. Meanwhile, it's kind of tense because, as you remember from the first part of our series here, he has betrayed the Obregon brothers, and the Obregon brothers put a hit out on him. So there's a hitter waiting in the neighboring book suppository with a sniper rifle getting ready to zap him in the parking lot while all this is going down. So he puts a bomb on the cop's car. Everyone's walking to the cop car. Everybody's getting the car. And then Miguel Ferrer is like, yo, can we just walk? I've been stuck in this hotel room for whatever. And they're like, all right, cool.
Well, so I think walking. I think he has an idea.
Like, you think he's suspected?
Oh, yeah, because he looks at that car real hard before he's like, we should probably walk. I think he knows that, like, I think he thinks there's a good chance that that car is rigged to explode.
Oh, that's fair. So anyway, they do that. She gets on the phone. She's on the phone. Captain J. Jones on the phone with Clifton Collins. She's like, what's going on? He's like, they're walking. She's like, you get out of the car and you zap them. He's like, all right.
He fucking does. He just.
So he gets out of the car and he's getting ready to zap. And then he gets zapped. And then gunfire. Louis Guzman, rest in power, runs back to the car because he's got an officer down. He gets in the car. It explodes. Right. So Louis Guzman's dead. Clifton Collins is dead. Catherine, the witness is still alive. And Catherine Zeta-Jones like, fuck. So she's like, I got to become a drug queen. So then she goes to meet with one of the Obregon brothers, played by Benjamin Bratt. And she's like, I made this doll out of cocaine. He's like, oh, that's fun. What do you need for that? She's like, I need my debts forgiven. I need exclusive rights to your cocaine. I need you to kill this dude. He's like, great. So then they poison Miguel Ferreira with housekeeping food. The case gets thrown out. They have a barbecue about it. Don Cheadle shows up, gets into a fight with their hitters, sneaks a bug in there, and then he wanders off smiling because now he's going to – I don't know if he could legally – I'm not sure the legality of what he did.
You're questioning the legality of what cops can do in this day and age? Come on,
dude. I mean, this was 2000, I guess. This was pre-Patriot Act. So,
yeah.
And then you're left with, all right, he lost him this time, but he'll get him next time. And then that's Traffic. That's the whole thing. It's just the whole movie is done with like chunklets in different places. And the way it's set up, it is long, but I did enjoy it. It is well-directed. It is well-acted.
Yeah. My only complaint is that it feels long. And I feel it's funny, Alex, like the Don Cheadle, Louis Guzman one was the boring one. The one I could care less about was like the crack whore thing. I felt like that. You could have cut that entire thing out of the movie. Cause like, I get kind of what they're going for. They're like, you know, this is the street level impact. It even affects like affluent kids. You know what I mean? It could be you, you know what I mean? Like,
but I it felt could like that happen story, to you.
I just felt like that story really went nowhere. And like, I get it. It ties into Michael Douglas's thing, but his thing almost felt separate. I don't know. It's the only plot line. I was like, I didn't really, like, cause it's also like, again, she comically becomes like cracked out in like 5 seconds. She becomes like a heroin junkie inside of like a week. It's just like, I don't know. It's a little, it feels like an after school special, like how people get into drugs. Like it was a little much for me. But everything else I really liked. I thought that the movie was excellent overall. This is a good one. Alec. Was your favorite part of the movie the inclusion of baseball, which is very popular in Mexico?
Is it?
It's very popular, yes.
Yeah, no. Yeah, probably. Sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
I was going to try to look up and find a player that may have been playing in that game, but I didn't take the time to actually do it. I was like, let me see who would have been about 10 in 2000 who might be in the majors right now
from
Mexico. But I did. I was too lazy.
Tigers just hit a fucking two-run home run with two outs. Cade Povich, you suck.
He does suck.
5-1 now. With two outs. Anyway. I don't know. Alec, anything you want to talk about Traffic?
No.
Or baseball.
I think I said it in the group text. Like, I want my cartel movies to be way more action-y and explosion-y. And I want Sicario. Not Sicario 2, because that movie sucked. But Sicario 1.
Sicario 2 was fucking awful.
Fucking rocks.
Yeah, Sicario 1 is amazing. I don't know, I feel like tonally it's similar to this movie.
Yeah, it doesn't get all that cool action stuff, though. It has a little bit. Yeah. But
it's not. It doesn't go as dark as Sicario did. It goes dark, but not as dark.
And like, I feel like the like boring to action ratios in these movies are like flipped. Because Sicario deals with some of the like the politics and stuff too, but mostly it's like, let's get some fucking action going on here, bros.
Yeah,
let's show maybe, some cool stuff.
Well, maybe Traffic had to crawl so Sicario could walk.
I mean, they feel like sister films. Like they seem, I don't know. I could. It's like a cartel double feature, you know.
And you love your Denis Villeneuve.
I do love Denis Villeneuve.
Big up.
Anything else before we can do Five Knuckle Shuffle?
Yeah.
I think we're good.
I'm giving it an 8. It's one of those movies that I can recognize. It is. I enjoyed it. It is well made. It is well shot. It is well acted. It is a good movie. I will not put it on the regular, right? Like if it was like something where I felt like I would, it would be a 9 if it maybe was a little shorter. And I felt like I wanted to like I rewatched Sicario recently because that movie goes. I'm not going to sit down and rewatch this. Not because it's bad. It's just like it's unnecessary. But it's like, you know, the movie's good. But it's an 8. It's a solid 8. Like I'm saying, and the movie has everyone. Like, every other scene, like, someone would walk on the screen, and I'd be like, holy shit. Like, there's, it's nuts. So, yeah. It's an 8 for me. Alec?
I'll give it a 6.
Oof.
It was a little shorter. It probably would have been a 7 or 8, but man, like for a movie that just reminded me of a better movie, it was way too long.
Fair.
You know what? That's.
And I have no like, I never saw it before, so I have no like love or like nostalgia for it or anything. So
no reverence.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself, Steven Soderbergh. TJ.
It's an 8 for me, dog. I really like this movie a lot. Again, I feel like parts of it kind of drag on a little bit, but overall, it's excellent. I really like the use of color in this movie. Like, I thought that the color filters, well, a lot of times when directors over rely on color filtering, I find it kind of annoying. This seemed to really work well. I love Del Toro. He's great in this movie. I thought all the acting in this was like very, very good. And I like the overall storyline. Like I liked the interweaving of all the plot lines. Like I felt like though it did feel long, it kept things moving at a good clip. It was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, it's an 8 for me, dog. So what do we watch next week, Uggs?
We are gonna watch.
Please tell me you changed your mind.
I did.
Okay, good.
Maybe. The Magnolia, because we're gonna watch Magnolia. I want to see it. I'm happy.
Are we watching Magnolia? You're going to make Alec watch a 3-hour long movie?
I'm not making Alec do anything. Alec's his own man.
That's true.
I'm sick. I'm going to call out.
He sounds a little tickled. I mean, I love the movie. So.
I've actually seen this and I liked it. But fucking A.
He might get a case of the Paul Reed Andersons or whatever the guy's name is that makes
them. Paul Reed
Andersons. Yeah, the Wes Andersons.
Yeah.
Who is Paul Reed Anderson?
What's this guy? This guy's a 3-name banger, right?
Oh, no. You're talking about... No, Jesus, now I can't think of his fucking name. No.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas Anderson. Yes.
Paul Thomas Anderson, right. Who's the guy that makes all the Resident Evil films?
The connecting
Paul W.S. Anderson.
The connecting fiber is Luis Guzman.
Luis Guzman is our connecting fiber. That is correct.
All right. Next week, Magnolia.
Yeah. Butter it up, boys.
All right. That's the show.
Strap it in.
I'm going to go back to eating some more masala munch.
Munch it up.
Everybody have a good, have a happy pride, and you know what to do. Eat your own ass.
Or the ass of a loving neighbor.
That's true. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Let's not be selfful or selfish during
later.
That's true. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.